From the Carlson Law Firm, welcome to Season 2 of The Verdict, a podcast about how personal injury law shapes the real lives of average Americans. I'm your host, Keisha Conway. Can you state your name, title, and what you do here at the firm?
My name is Reed Morgan. I'm of counsel to the Carlson Law Firm. I handle a variety of cases representing people against corporations, and it's in the field of maritime law and products liability. Occasionally we have trucking incidents where people are either injured or killed, and sometimes consumer type cases where people have been the victims of overreaching and pricing, things of that nature.
Okay. Today we are going to be talking about tort reform. It's the second half of an interview that we started back in June, I believe it was.
Yes, ma'am.
So you handled the Stella Liebeck lawsuit against McDonald's, more famously known as the hot coffee case.
Right.
So can you talk to us a little bit about how the conversation of frivolous lawsuits came about?
From my perspective, I believe that there was a big push in tort reform around the time of the Liebeck case. I think it probably had started before then. I remember that right after the Liebeck case, Newt Gingrich and some of the national commentators were using it as a platform to argue that the tort system was out of control and basically saying that people were filing lawsuits over silly things and collecting a lot of money because the system wasn't functioning properly.
In your opinion, is there such thing as frivolous lawsuits?
I agree. There are frivolous lawsuits that are potentially filed. Anybody can file a lawsuit that has the money to file a lawsuit. They can even file it personally. So, for example, if you were to feel that you'd been damaged by somebody that looked at you wrongfully or said something negative about your appearance, you could file a lawsuit, which, you know, it'd be very difficult to win under freedom of speech and things of that nature. But what happens is the court system protects us against that kind of thing because of you have to state a cause of action that is understood in the law. You have to show that there's a duty owed to you that was breached or that somebody intentionally wronged you and in doing that broke some provision of law, and so those kinds of cases are generally tossed out by the trial judge, and if they're not, then the courts of appeal will take care of that. Plus, the cost now has gotten high on filing lawsuits. I don't know what it is here in this county, but it's probably around $350, $450, so most people have gotten away from that sort of thing. Other than that, frivolous lawsuits like they say the Liebeck case was a frivolous lawsuit. Well, the question becomes, what does frivolous lawsuit mean? Does it mean that somebody is trying to collect money wrongfully over hurt feelings or feeling that they were taken advantage of, so they want a bunch of money for that? That's kind of the implication that the national tort reformers touted when they were doing so much advertising. The other example was around that time there was a case that involved a person that was seriously injured in a telephone booth close to a street, I believe in Los Angeles, California. Mm-hmm. And I can remember Reagan and others, I believe it was, making fun of that. You know, this is crazy. This person's suing the phone company because an automobile hit the phone booth. If you read the decision and you read the case, you would learn that there had been other incidents where people had been injured in that phone booth that was struck by vehicles. The phone company was on notice. It was too close to the highway. And so the person that was in it didn't have that knowledge that it was easy to be a person that would be struck because of the location of the, mm-hmm. of the phone booth. So it sounded ridiculous, but when you dig deep and drill down, look at the facts, you understand, hey, the phone company knew this is in the wrong place. People can get hit by a high-speed automobile. We need to move the thing back.
Okay. Why was there such a push at the time for capping damages?
Because the United States is run by corporate America. Corporate America elects the congressman, elects the president of the United States. Businesses in this country want to maximize their profits, and they don't want to be paying out money to injured people. And they are in large part funded by insurance companies, and insurance companies want to collect premiums and don't want to pay claims. Mm-hmm.
The drive to cap damages in personal injury lawsuits, it ultimately failed legislatively, but a version of tort reform still came about. Can you talk a little bit about that?
My understanding is that Congress didn't want to enact national tort reform. They did realize with the Seventh Amendment, right to jury trial, right to file lawsuits for injuries, and left it to the states to regulate it based upon the conventional desires or wisdom of the state legislators, who are presumably to reflect the desires of their constituents, the people that elect them. So, again, a lot of the lobbies that pass laws in the states are funded in large part by insurance companies and corporations, so they were able to pass some tort reform. And I believe a lot of it started down in Florida with the no-fault insurance on automobile accidents.
Can you talk about that?
Is a long time ago. It goes back way back, like maybe 35 years ago, when mm-hmm. there was a push to have no-fault, the ability to make a claim for your injuries without having to prove fault. But when doing that, you were giving up certain rights, like a right to pain and suffering damages as opposed to your medical expenses and your property damage. And then after that, it evolved into tort reform. Like here in Texas, in the medical malpractice arena, you cannot collect more than $250,000 for your pain and mental anguish from a personal injury, even when a physician or hospital is shown to have been negligent. So, by example, an extreme case might be you go in to have your right foot amputated because you have gangrene or a diabetic condition that's gotten so bad, and they amputate the wrong foot. Well, you're entitled to $250,000 for that negligence if you can prove that case. So it's an artificial assessment of what your damages and your misery are worth, rather than leaving it to a jury.
Okay. So you just mentioned the medical caps that
right.
exist. What else did tort reform ultimately do?
Another thing that tort reform did was it changed the locations where you can file a lawsuit to cause you to file your lawsuit where the incident occurred, as opposed to other situations where you're entitled to file it where you live. And still, we have that right in some cases, but that was one of the things it did. It put limits on certain other types of availability to make a claim. A good example would be in the products liability arena. Let's say you go to Walmart and you buy a bicycle that's made in China, and you want to make a claim against Walmart because when you got on the bicycle, the handlebars were not assembled correctly and you flipped over. And so you want to make a negligence claim against the seller saying that the bike was defective. In Texas, you are barred from making claims against a seller, in that case would be Walmart, unless you can show you can't get jurisdiction over the manufacturer that made it, like they come from a foreign country and you can't get jurisdiction over them. So you have to understand when you go to a lawyer that they need to read the books and understand, you know, what are the viable defense and that kind of thing. Those are two key things that we're familiar with. Responsible third parties is another tort reform situation where the laws are written where if you have more than one defendant that you sue, you've got to be careful that you bring into the lawsuit all of the various parties that could be held responsible. Because if you don't, there's going to be a so-called empty chair there where somebody that your lawyer didn't sue hasn't been brought in, and they're going to be held to be a responsible third party. And if the person that you, or corporation you have sued, can show that they contributed to cause the incident, you might lose X percentage, you know, whether it's 10, 20, 50%, 75% of your case, because you don't have every responsible party in there. Also, in tort reform, if you are injured on the job due to the fault of a defective piece of equipment, let's say it's a machine that cuts off your arm, under tort reform, your employer can be held to be accountable X percentage for not properly training you or not putting a guard on a defective machine themselves, if that can be shown successfully, so that that's a responsible third party that can reduce your claim against that manufacturer. But under Texas law, you cannot sue your employer if they have workers' comp insurance. So you may lose a large percentage of your claim to a defendant that you cannot sue.
Wow. I think that that kind of touches on what my next question is, which is, how have our rights been affected as a result of tort reform?
Well, okay, so who wants tort reform? The injured people don't want tort reform. The people that are enlightened, that understand that if they become paralyzed because of a surgeon's malpractice, they don't feel that $250,000 is fair for them to have to sit in one place or be, you know, relegated to being in a wheelchair the rest of their life. They don't want that. But they don't realize when tort reform was on the ballot that that's what was going on. And so the problem is the people that want it are the insurance companies and corporations that have the money to research it and to lobby the state legislators for it, while people that are in the working class, both blue-collar and white-collar, don't have the time to do that and don't realize what they're doing is basically handing their rights over to corporations to abuse them.
You were practicing law before tort reform even happened. So how did it affect you as an attorney?
Well, tort reform also included reforms in, like I'd said earlier, venue selection, venue being where you can file a lawsuit. And it was designed to give safe havens to defendants where you had conservative jury veneres in that situation. So it affected my practice in that it made it necessary in some ways to go out of state to file lawsuits. There's a requirement here in Texas that if you have what's called a toxic tort injury, let's say you get cancer because you're exposed to chemicals or a certain type of dust in your work environment, that you're supposed to meet a doubling of the risk in order to be able to successfully pursue your claim. So epidemiology is a study of statistics to show whether there's a heightened degree of risk of harm when you're exposed to a given chemical or dust, okay? And so like you or I, the way the statistical base is written, we have a 1.0 risk ratio of getting cancer in our lifetime. Let's say we work at a gas station or even more so delivering gasoline in a tank truck for 25 years. And we get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Well, if the statistics that are done with statistically reliable scientific methodology shows the risk ratio is 1.8, we have an 80% greater chance of getting cancer because of that occupation than we otherwise would have had. Tort reform in the jurisprudence in this state says, well, you're SOL, you're not going to be able to make your claim here because you don't meet a 2.0 risk ratio. where in probably 49 or 48 other states in the country, you could make that claim. So a lot of toxic tort lawyers have left the state of Texas and gone elsewhere to practice because they have a lot of problems proving their claims here.
Huh. Okay, that's definitely an injustice because I feel like 80%, like, it's just as bad as 100%. So
sure. I mean, it's scientifically many, many risk ratios for cancer come in at 1.2, 1.4, 1.6, 20%, 40%, 60% higher probability of harm. You take acute myelogenous leukemia, it's what they call a footprint cancer that shows that particular chemical has been there, because you don't get acute myelogenous leukemia except as a child or probably past the age of 65. Mm. In the interim, you don't get it unless you are exposed to toxins, one of which is cigarette smoking. So if you come down with cancer in your 40s and you work around chemicals, and those chemicals cause that cancer, and it's been shown by science it does, mm-hmm. but the risk ratio is only 1.6, well, in the state of Texas, they say, well, you're not going to be able to make that claim, which makes no sense because the differential diagnosis is, this is like saying that when you hear the hooves of running cattle, it must be zebras. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Reed, why should people care about this?
People should care about this because when they're trying to support a family or raise children, support elderly parents, and they become injured or ill, it's not a game of where it's a get-rich effort. It's a need to be compensated for your loss of wages, your loss of physical function, your loss of enjoyment of life, your ability to travel, have your hobbies, have a well-rounded existence, as opposed to being, you know, relegated to perhaps being homebound or wheelchair-bound and not compensated to where you could go. Like we see it with perfect example. We tried a railroad case now about 4 years ago, proved the case, got a jury verdict, a substantial verdict, but a fair verdict. The railroad misrepresented the law to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals rubber-stamped the application of the wrong law. Court of Appeals is this particular circuit staffed by tort reform elected type judges. Mm. Writ's gone to the Supreme Court of Texas, same thing. And so the verdict is taken away, remanded for a new trial. Takes years to start over. That's tort reform for you. Gentleman goes from making $125,000 a year to zero. And is in his early 60s out of work.
That's terrible. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add to this?
I think you've done an excellent job of asking the right questions. I would just encourage people to understand that look at your insurance bills. We've had tort reform now for the past 30 years. Have they gone down? That'll tell you where's the money going that was saved from perhaps lower payouts. Check the salaries on the insurance executives. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Visit us at carlsonattorneys.com to read more information about tort reform. We'd also love for you to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and recommend us to your friends. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by searching The Carlson Law Firm. As always, if you're in need of a personal injury attorney, give us a call at 1-800-359-5690. We're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We care, and we can help.